Mike, alcoholic.
My sobriety date is November 30th, 2017. I have a sponsor who knows he's my sponsor, and I sponsor someone else. And this is my home group. I was thinking about this today, I never thought that I'd be back here doing this again. Like, when I left Alcoholics Anonymous, it was 2014, and I was never coming back. And I came back in 2017, crawling back in here. I was really sick, and I wasn't sure it was going to work this time. And so far it has, you know. I asked Lloyd to speak for me tonight. There was a time I was probably, I guess it was 2.5 years ago, Lloyd, when you came back? Yeah, 2.5 years ago. When I came in, one of the first people I asked about was, where's Lloyd? And they're like, oh, he's not here. And he came in a few years ago, and I was at a really low point in my sobriety. I'm really lucky I didn't drink. And he picked up the phone, I guess, or I picked up the phone and called him, or he called me, and he had come up with this way to make all this money, and he was going to get his own office and take on the world being sober. And I was like, that sounds awesome, man. Great. And he said, but I need help moving this furniture, and you got a pretty big car, so maybe you could help me with that. And I was like, yeah, whatever, man. So I helped him move into his office, and we were talking about this last week. I remember we kind of got the office set up, and he was like, what do you think, man? This is pretty good, huh? And I was like, yeah, Lloyd, this is awesome. Yeah, great. You know, that office didn't last. I think he upgraded to Ebor and then busted out of there and went on to bigger and better things. But I think that the only thing I was thinking about with Lloyd is to see the man that came in Alcoholics Anonymous and to see the man he is today is a testament to the power and how this program works. Because he was just as defeated as I was, and how most of us were when we come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And he can hold his head up high now. And he's one of the people that I look up to in the program. So with that, I give you Lloyd.
Lloyd, alcoholic.
Lloyd.
I didn't know Mike was going to get up here and roast me. Jeez. Wow. I'm unprepared, you know. I got nothing to say back. Damn. But congratulations, Mike. 7 years. That's a big deal, man. I was so glad you were here when I got back, man. I needed to see familiar faces. You know what I mean? People that were still sober doing this thing, showing me that Alcoholics Anonymous works. So I'm really grateful for that. But congratulations, Liz. It's great to see you're back. You know, AA works for sure. Liz is sober a year. Again, it's awesome. And Rachel, thanks for sharing your story. That was really powerful. I always love hearing you talk, and I looked forward to it all day because I knew you were going to speak tonight. And but yeah, Mike, I'm glad I saved your life when I got back here. You know, I didn't realize it was so dark for you, and you know, sounds like you're on your way out. And I came in, and I was very positive about my life. And you know, I was a bright shining light for you. You know, and really, what it was. Total self-will, you know. I gave up the drinking, no problem. You know, I saw that I wasn't going to be successful in life if I didn't give the booze up, that's for sure. But, you know, I could start a business, you know, on my own. You know, why not? Why do I need to rely on you guys for help with that? And, you know, I just didn't know. But one thing is, Mike, he acted like he wasn't impressed. I mean, up here, dude, you were like selling me on the right, like I was on the right path, dude. You're like, keep going, man. This is it. You'll hire me once you're like, you know, up and running. And I appreciate you doing that, man, because, you know, I really needed to I don't know, I needed to go through that, you know, and experience that. And on the other side of that, yeah, it burned down pretty quick, you know. You know, a lot of self-will, like I mentioned, and, you know, but on the other side of that, I've really learned to, like, rely on God, you know, and I needed that experience of just running the show in that area of my life to realize that, you know, God is everything or he's nothing. And so I'm really grateful for that time. And, you know, it's 7 years, man. Wild. I left AA when I had 7 years sober, you know, and I got, man, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I had my first drink when I was 11, and I was an awkward kid, but I loved what Rachel said. I was loved so much, you know, literally. Now looking back on it, I got to do whatever I want, whenever I wanted to. Like, there was no family dinners growing up. My parents got divorced when they were 2. My dad was an absolute lunatic. Somebody asked me what my earliest childhood memory was the other day, and I was like, oh, jeez, right to trauma, you know? And I was like, oh, my God, no. And then I was, like, trying to think of the second earliest childhood memory, and I was like, nope, not good either, you know? And it all involved my old man. Like, you know, that my dad threatened to kill me and my mom when I was 5 years old, and we were in the neighbor's house. He punched my mom in the eye, attacked the cop, and I was, like, just standing there, like, what? And then, like, everybody tried to talk to me after that, and I just know that's when I checked out, man. Like, I wanted no part of that, you know? And what's weird is, like, you know, when you, like, divorces, and you're, like, always, like, nudged to keep the family together and, you know, spend time with your dad and in situations, and they were all the same like that. I got like 7 memories of my old man. They were all like that, you know, cops showing up, and just weird stuff. And so, you know, by the time I was 11, you know, my mom, we were in Pittsburgh, and she decided, you know, it'd probably be a good idea to move to Florida. And, you know, I've talked to her. She's like, yeah, I ran from Pittsburgh. And I understand why, because my dad was just terrorizing the family, you know? And, so, you know, got to Florida, and, you know, I'm new to town. I'm 11 years old. It's the summer going into 6th grade. And, you know, before I moved down here, I was, like, really active in sports. Like, baseball was my thing. Like, that's all I wanted to do was play professional baseball, you know? And, or, like, you know, try and do that in my life. And I was pretty good as a little kid, you know? But I got to Florida, and I just had, like, this deep-rooted resentment, because I had lots of friends in Pittsburgh, you know? Everybody loved Lloyd, you know? And so I was upset. Got here, I was going to have to make new friends, and, you know, I just remember just being really resentful at my mom for that, you know, really shut down, and, you know, and but I was able to make friends with the neighbors across the street, and their names were Danny and Chris, and they fished. They loved fishing, and I've never fished in my life. I just know they were like having me tag along with them. We'd meet outside before the sun would come up every day that summer. And we would go to these different like fishing holes and fish. And, you know, I never caught anything, never really tried. They were always catching fish. And, you know, until the last day of summer going into 6th grade, I had a really profound experience the first time I drank. And this is where I fell in love with booze. And I am a guy that remembers his first drink like it was yesterday. You know, I know a lot of people don't. Maybe they had some sips here and there. Now, I remember the first time I drank. It was in the Everglades. And, you know, there was this convenience store up C-14 Canal, right on 441. And it was called the Mexi Mart. And, you know, I went in there and I grabbed a 6-pack of Ice House. And then, you know, I asked the guy at the counter, I'm like, what's good wine, you know? And he goes, MD 2020. So I grabbed a bottle of that. And it was strawberry banana, I think. You know, and now I walked up to the counter and a guy sold me the booze, no questions asked. And, you know, I'm 11 years old, 90 pounds soaking wet. And, you know, we walked back to the fishing hole where we were fishing that day. And I just couldn't wait to drink, because I talked to Danny that morning and I was like, what happens when you drink? He's like, you get this warm feeling inside. And I remember thinking, like, I want that, you know, I just want to feel different. You know, I'm very uncomfortable. This fishing stuff isn't really working out for me. You know, I'm just like, let's drink. And so we each took 2 Ice House, and I started chugging mine too. And I remember like catching Danny and Chris like pouring theirs out, you know, and pretending like they were drinking it. And I thought, and I got that. I was like, this is disgusting. Like, why would anybody ever drink this stuff, you know? And then we started passing the bottle MD-2020 around. And, you know, my experience with the first time I drank, I began to catch fish. And I had a record day. I started trying, really, is the deal. And that's what alcohol did for me. And I took note of that. The first time I drank, I started trying. I started showing up for life. And I got really sick that day, and I blacked out, and I threw up, came to a cold shower. My sister was smacking me across the face. She's like, you've been in here for hours. There's puke all around me. And, you know, I don't know if I swore off alcohol completely or not, but I do remember, you know, the next day when I was going to sixth grade, like, I was like, oh my God, I got to figure out how to get loaded on a daily basis. And that's what I started doing. And that's pretty much my story. You know, middle school, barely made it through. I never showed up unless I had something to get me loaded. And in Florida, it's like nobody's left behind type deal. And, you know, I skipped half the year all through middle school. And, you know, I just kind of kept getting pushed along. And by the time I'm 15, you know, my story only makes sense. There's a lot of drugs in it because it's hard to get booze when you're underage. But we figured it out, you know, from time to time. And really, you know, I got hooked on some opioids, and oxys were really big at the time. And, you know, and that's kind of what I did. I kind of just hung out in pharmacy parking lots. We had a bunch of friends that were, you know, running these hustles on pharmacists. And South Florida was just really big. And really, I just did that stuff for like 3 weeks at a time. And then I'd get off it by doing Xanax. And I'd get off the Xanax by just smoking pot. And I'd get off the pot by just drinking. Always had a handle of Captain Morgan's. And, you know, we just drank a lot and just partied. And, you know, and I barely made it through high school. And I didn't. I dropped out. And by the time I'm 17 years old, it's apparent to everybody that I got to get loaded on a daily basis, you know, and that I have a problem, you know. And my mom's like worried, and she comes into my room. She's like, we're going to have family therapy. And so we go up to this facility in Delray Beach, Florida. It's called the Renaissance Institute. And on the way there, I'm like, man, this is good family therapy, you know. I'm like really like thinking I'm like doing this for my mom. And we get there, and it's like this, you know, the 12th, it's like a treatment center, you know. And I had no idea I was like voluntarily going to my intervention, you know. And so, you know, I like, once I figured it out, I just like effed everybody in the room. I don't have a problem with alcohol. There's no way I'm giving up booze. And, you know, so they like sent in this guy. He had like tattoos and long hair, and his name was Mike. And I guess he was like the closer, because he came in and he's like, you're selfish, you're self-centered, you're egotistical, you're grandiose, mother effer. And I remember being like, what? Like, I had no idea what he was talking about. I just remember those words really stung. And, you know, I was like, all right, you know. And so I'm like, all right, I'm just going to stay here. You know, I'm going to stay at this treatment center, get these people off my back, you know, go back to doing what I really want to be doing. And that's just getting loaded. You know, that's all I knew how to do. It was the solution to my life, you know. You know, so I got introduced to AA there. They brought meetings in, took us to outside meetings. You know, I remember relating to some people's shares and hearing the readings and the more about alcoholisms and stuff like that. But, you know, really, I just wasn't ready to give up booze. And that was the deal. And that would become the theme of my life all the way up for the next 4 years. I managed to get sober at 21 in Tampa. You know, I showed up at a meeting on a whim. And this guy was there. He was chairing the meeting. And at the end of the meeting, I just went up to him and I, you know, thanked him for his service. And he 12-stepped me across the street at La Terracita. It was like the perfect 12-step call because, you know I got a problem with drugs, right? But I'm like, booze? There's like no way. There's no way I'm giving up booze. And, you know, so he 12-stepped me, told me, like, take all my problems, put them under the umbrella of alcoholism and, you know, say you're an alcoholic. And at the time, I thought that was a great idea, you know, like, heck yeah, all right, fine. Like, I can, you know, what I heard was like, I could live some sort of a normal life if I just admit I'm an alcoholic, you know, really just like to do it, you know. And, you know, at the time I believed it, you know, I believed I was an alcoholic. And, you know, I got involved with this group. This group was around and, you know, 2005. And, you know, it was awesome. We did a lot of service and, you know, we got involved and everybody was sponsoring each other. And, you know, it was awesome. It was a really good time, and my life got better, you know. And, you know, the more I did, the bigger my life got and the jobs I got. And, you know, it was just, it was an awesome time, you know. And you know, I ended up moving to South Florida for a job, you know, a gift of sobriety. And, you know, probably self-will there. I didn't, you know, I was probably making decisions on my own, you know, not really bouncing off the people, you know, in AA. And, you know, but I wanted to go to South Florida. My, you know, one of my good friends moved down there for a company, and I went down there to join. And, you know, and the plan was, like, I'd been in AA long enough to have connections in South Florida, and the plan was to get involved as soon as I got down there, right? You know, I knew where to go. I knew who to hang out with. And but I got interested in other things. You know, I think it was like Tinder just came out, and, you know, the dating apps were out there. And, you know, and I started really just, you know, messing around there, snooping around on there in South Florida. You know, it was, that became my interest in the gym. And, you know, just going to meetings wasn't, you know, something I was thinking about. And you hear that story a lot in AA, what happened, you know. And I long story short, I slowly drifted away from AA. And I started putting myself in situations where drinks were being poured. And I remember, like, the one time I was at this brunch and sitting across the table from somebody I just met. And it's, like, mimosas unlimited. And she orders, and then I order coffee. And she's looking at me with this look on her face. And I knew, like, what are you, she's a coffee? Like, what, like, bottomless mimosas, what's wrong with you? And I remember, like, being so far away from AA and thinking, yeah, next time. That's going to happen. And that's exactly what happened. I was so far away from you guys. Somebody poured a drink, asked me if I wanted it, and I took it. And if you would have asked me 6 months prior to that, if I thought I was an alcoholic, I would have been like, yeah, to drink is to die. And really, I had no defense against that drink. And, you know, I just took it. And I had no defense because AA was always my connection to a power greater than myself. And, you know, so that would start really 3 years in and out. I made it back to Tampa. I was in and out. You know, I was here a lot of times wanting to be here. I was here a lot of times just getting people off my back, you know. And I remember Blair came over to my house, who's here tonight. Appreciate you, man. Came over. I was like hoarding like whiskey and pills and, you know, pot and, you know, just unlimited supplies, because that's where my drinking took me. Like, I had to find the perfect buzz to leave the house. And it took a lot of different things and balancing and trying this and ripping this and, you know, and like heading for the door finally, just like once it would hit. The problem would be I'd always sober up and then just be like, damn, I need to do that again. Got to go home, you know? And, but there was, I guess there was one point I was like ready again. So I called Blair, he comes over, we pour everything out, you know, and I was serious. I was like serious to get sober again, I remember. And, you know, long story short, ended up just relapsing shortly after that. You know, I couldn't get it. I couldn't find what I had found previously. And so ended up, you know, just coming up with, like, I'm never coming back to AA. That was my deal. You know, I was out for 6 years. And, you know, I was going to figure out how to drink normally. And somehow, someday, that was like the my mantra. Somehow, someday, I'll be able to figure this out. And really, I was never going to figure it out, right? But I really thought I could. I could beat the game. And I gave it my all. And somehow I wound back up in Tampa. It's so crazy that I'm here. Wow. And my last year of drinking was really dark. Probably similar to Mike's drinking, and I was in New York City, and I was just isolated to an apartment, and you know, back to that trying to find the right buzz to get out the front door, you know. And it was not good. It was very dark, and I woke up on April 1st, 2022. You know, I get why that person blew their head off. You know, I really do. I understand that so much. And because, you know, my head was so busy, you know, really a lot of self-pity. And so that scared me. And I found a meeting in Jacksonville, and I went back and I picked up a white chip, and I've been sober since. Hasn't been easy. There's been a lot of work. I think what really helped in the beginning was getting a sponsor. And I remember I called my sponsor. I knew who I was going to pick to be my sponsor, because I had been stalking him on social media. And, you know, like when I'm like really depressed drinking, like, let's see what Terry's doing. And what I saw over that like 6 years, as I would creep on his Facebook, and I saw somebody, because I know Terry, I saw him get sober, and I know the person he is, and where he's been, and where he went, and where he's going, and I was able to see probably what Mike's seen in me in the last couple of years, you know, that, you know, he had something here, and I remember, I'm so grateful that he got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, he made it look really attractive, you know, and so I knew how to call him, and I just called him, and I was like, hey, man, I picked up a white chip, and he's immediately, what do you need? Need a job? Need a place to live? And because that's just the type of guy he is, man, you know, that's, and the only thing I could think of is just, all I wanted was to sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous next to you, you know? And that's all I wanted when I got here, was to sit next to Terry in a meeting. And, you know, I made it back, and I was in bad shape. Everything hurt. Had long hair, hadn't cut it since COVID. And because I thought that was, you know, I don't know. I was like, fuck, I was hiding, you know? I didn't know who I was. I totally forgot. And, you know, but Terry took me under his wing, and we started working the steps. And, you know, we did, that's it. That's why I'm still here today. And, you know, I really destroyed my life out there, you know. I showed up here, you know, just really screwed up, man. Financially, everything is wrong, you know, was wrong at the time. And, but by getting into the steps and getting honest with somebody and sharing that inventory is what really helped me out. I came in here with a deep-rooted resentment at my dad, God, you know, those were my first two resentments on my list, and, you know, I just felt like I got left behind out there, and it's crazy, because when I was growing up, I thought it was the coolest thing ever, you know, like, I literally got to do whatever I want, but then I, like, turned 33, and I was like, what were you guys thinking, like, freaking let me do whatever I want, you know, like, what the hell, you know, and so I had a lot of resentments when I got here. Which is crazy to me, but it's true, and, you know, but we worked through that stuff, and, you know, and like Mike said, I got here, and I had all these plans and designs for my life, but I definitely gave the booze up, and, you know, that was taken away from me, you know, God took the obsession away from me, and really the 12 steps and coming to AA took that away from me, but I still had my claws, and, you know, my finances, and other areas of my life, which, you know, and still trying to loosen the grip on. But there was some work that needed to be done to start loosening the grip. And, you know, when I got here, I was totally fine with never, I hadn't talked to my old man, and I hadn't talked to him in 15 years, and I hadn't seen him in 20, and I could care less, you know, if I ever saw him again or talked to him. And while I was trying to get that business off the ground, my cell phone rang on Halloween 2022, and it was a number from Pittsburgh. I didn't recognize it, but I picked it up. And it was this private detective. He's like, hey, are you so-and-so's son? And I'm like, excuse me? I'm like, yeah, what's up? He's like, hey, he's in the hospital, and we think it might be a good time for you to meet him or see him. And I was like, what? And this is Halloween. It was like the scariest thing that ever happened to me, you know, my old man showing up on Halloween. It's a day I'll never forget, though, you know. And I remember talking to my sponsor about it and being like, hey, man, is this like part of the steps? Do I got to like do this thing? Is this real? Like, I mean, this doesn't seem right, man. Like, what? Like, why do I got to make amends here? Like, and really, I was, you know, the point behind that is my dad became the boogeyman in my life, and I was so terrified of him and him showing up just randomly or whatever. And it's something I needed to go face. And it took about 3 weeks of inventorying and writing down like that I'm scared. You know, I remember writing these fear inventories, like I'm scared of my dad. You know, like what the hell. And then there was one night after doing this exercise for like 3 weeks where I went to write down in my mind, I am afraid of my dad. And what came out was I'm not afraid. And it was so weird. Like the pen, like from what I understand, doesn't lie. And I knew right then I had to go do this thing. And I remember telling my sponsor, like, hey, man, I'm ready to go. And he jumped on, you know, and said, let's go together. And that's the only way I would have ever pulled that off was, you know, that support I had from my sponsor. And so we just went up to Pittsburgh in the middle of winter. And, you know, I loved it. He still says it was too cold to ever go in that time of year. But, you know, it was a great time. And, you know, in this experience, I got to sit down at the table with my dad and, you know, set right, you know, those wrongs that, you know, being afraid and, you know, not communicating, not looking for him ever. And, you know, I got to share that experience with my sponsor, and I remember when we got back into the car after that experience, it was like a spiritual awakening. And I remember I'm just like, you know, it was very cathartic, the crying and just the joy and the emotion that came over it. And, you know, what really got me excited was how turned on by this experience spiritually that my sponsor was. I could just see him light up, you know. And that really helped me with understanding what we're actually doing around here and really what the third step prayer talks about and bearing witness to those we would help, you know. And I never knew what that meant until I had that experience. And, you know, that's God working in my life. Hopefully I could help somebody and share that experience with somebody else. And that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for me, you know. And that's the Alcoholics Anonymous I want to be a part of. So thanks for letting me share.